Hey there, this is Seth Juarez from Channel 9 here at .NET Fringe, all about open source in .NET. We're pretty excited. There's tons of good content. We're going to get a lot of people to talk to. And then I know they're posting some of the talks online. Mm-hmm. Tell us a little bit, Amir Rajan, about your talk.
Well, I talked about how to push C# to the limits mm-hmm. with a DLR.
Okay.
And the DLR stands for Dynamic Language Runtime.
Okay.
And really, it's not that big of a deal. Mm-hmm. There's two primary interfaces. So there's
Right.
So there's metadata provider, uh-huh. and then dynamic object.
Okay.
Which leverages I metadata provider.
Got it.
And so what I was really struggling with is there were situations where, so let me tell you a story.
Okay.
So I was doing development 2010. So I was doing a little bit of WinForms development.
Okay.
And during that time period, I was working on a WinForms app, and this WinForms app was converted from 2.0 to 3.5.
Okay.
So it was a pretty seamless seamless upgrade, and I was working with the full time employees at this place, and I had to work on this specific feature, and it was this list view that said basically, well, an example would be I need to sort these people by their age, then their last name, and then their first name.
Okay.
Right. So it was 2.0 code. You know, it was just loops upon loops.
Right, stuff we all do all the time, yeah.
Right. So, I deleted that code, and I wrote extension methods. So I said, for this list of people, order by, or where age is greater than 18,
right.
Order by last name, then by first name, right? And I committed that code, and then one of the employees looked at that code and was just terrified with what they saw, right? Because they never used extension methods, so they saw this... they saw these extension methods, and they're like, this is all magic. I don't understand it.
Right.
It's just crazy. So around the same time, we were working on an MVC application, and there was a situation where I was trying to use an anonymous type
mm-hmm.
In two places. So I created this. People thing, and I want to do the same projection, right? So you'll do the select, and you do your new, and then put that in there, and you get IntelliSense right below it.
Right.
But then it's like, well, okay, I want to use this in two places now.
Well, yeah, it's just an object after that.
Right,
that
yeah,
scope.
Exactly, right? So I try to extend it out into a function, and then I would return object back, and then I didn't get, I'd get compile time errors because I can't access those variables
right.
anymore. So then I was thinking about, well, okay, I don't really have any option. I thought I didn't have any option. I was like, well, I can use dynamic, the dynamic keyword.
Interesting.
And I was hesitant myself. I was just worried about using the dynamic keyword. I really didn't understand it. But then I thought back to that WinForms app that I was building,
uh-huh.
and the extension methods. And so, part of me just realized that I, up until that time, I've been a C# 3.5 developer, and I never became a C# 4.0 developer.
Right.
And that was a realization that, maybe I need to explore the dynamic runtime a little bit and really understand that it's part of the language. Everything's okay.
Yeah, it is.
It's okay. Everything's fine. And after I started using the DLR and the dynamic language runtime, there were specific problems that were much, much easier to tackle.
Got it. So now here's the thing, right? Like, so I'm used to dynamic stuff like in other languages. What does that even look like in a .NET project? Because I mean, C# is strongly typed,
mm-hmm.
but when you're using dynamic, it's strongly not typed. It's strongly typed to not be static.
It's sometimes type, right?
Yeah,
it's
is there something you can show us to help us get an understanding of it?
So in fact, this was the actual problem that I was dealing with. So, of course, everyone loves sequence diagrams, and this was an ASCII sequence diagram.
I know,
so it's
like
awesome,
it's like
right?
level 2, man.
Yeah.
You're like level 3 on this.
Yep, so this was actually on the project that I was working on, and the issue was we had our browser, and it was talking to some front-end mm-hmm. application, right? So front-end web server, and that was in our DMZ, so we poked a hole into our service layer to, provide a little bit of the API calls, and then there was a third-party vendor thing that we had to interact with also.
Right.
So the challenge was, a request comes in to the front end. That front end goes to the service layer over REST API,
right.
gets some JSON data back. Model binder is used to convert that to a DTO,
mm-hmm.
right? But the service layer, when they get that request, it's got its own DTO that it's doing, right?
Yeah.
And then you go to the repository, which is using, you know, any new framework or N hybrid or anything like that.
It's another object.
So you have another object, and the thing is you can't, because let's say that object had a foreign key reference that maybe was a self-referencing foreign key reference. So you can't serialize that because you'll get into, you know, the recursive
stack overflow.
So then you have this so this entire thing was like, okay, I got a repository. I have to convert rows to models, and then I have to convert the models to JSON DTOs, and then the DTOs get sent over the front end, and those have to be created in view models.
Yeah, that's a lot of infrastructure.
Right, and you know, I did this enough to where I was. This is sometimes it's good, right?
Right.
Sometimes the problem constitutes that kind of separation. But that's when I started thinking, I was like, wow, this is just so much code to do this thing, and I'm not getting any benefits from the static typing.
Yeah.
Because every time I'm hitting a process boundary, right, the database to the service layer is a process boundary.
Mm-hmm.
So even though I had a static type on my data on my service layer, if the schema changes, if I add a column or rename it,
everything is
there's no guarantee, right?
Again, yeah.
Right, and then the same thing from the service layer to the front end. And the issue was because we had this separation, then the duplication of DTO objects doubled because it wasn't just the service layer serving up the website. That was our REST API, and then on our front end. We had to do the same thing
over again. Anytime there's a change in any boundary, you're going to have to rewrite a lot of stuff.
Yes.
In essence. Yeah.
Yeah,
that's awesome.
Yep. And so that's what I was really struggling with. So let me show you the solution that we ended up using.
Okay.
And the idea here is the real struggle that I had was with, especially with the existing constructs in C#, and where I wanted to be was that, let's say I started with a dictionary, right? You would just do, you know, a dictionary is equal to new dictionary divide by zero.
Yeah, that's what we wanted.
Dictionary, there we go, of a string object. Like so, right?
And you forgot the comma.
Yep, I forgot the comma.
Pair programming. It works,
pair programming at its best,
yeah.
Right? And then the thing is like the dictionary literal itself, you would have to do something like, let's say, the literal syntax isn't that great, right? So if I had name, you know, this is what it would look like, right?
And then like new oh yeah, there you go.
Right?
That's right, because string is an object.
String is an object,
yeah.
Right. So, you know, this is okay, and then you can actually access the name, right?
Yeah.
Like so. Okay? So that worked out. You know, I can do a write line of that.
Now, the thing about that is that's eerily familiar, like if you're using data table objects or data row.
Right.
It's exactly like what a data row would be.
Yes. Like data row, data reader, data tables, all those things have this feel to it.
Mm-hmm.
And what I was really struggling with was that if I started my solution like this, and this was, I felt the fundamental problem with data sets and data readers and some of those other constructs, was there's a brick wall between going from this construct to something more real.
Right.
Right? And so that was a challenge that I personally faced was I was able to use the Expando object,
mm-hmm.
and iMetadata provider and some of those things, and create these nice types, but there are times where you need to move off the dynamic spectrum into more statically typed code.
Right.
So then what do? There's like this chasm that there was no way to go from a dynamic object to a statically typed object. And we tried that with strongly typed data sets, and it just didn't work, right? So the challenge was, you know, I had to deal with this. So one thing I thought about was, you know, our dictionary syntax isn't that great, right? So I explored, anonymous types. So, you know, this is much better.
Yeah, and not only that, but you get IntelliSense and understands it well within the scope of the method.
Within the scope of the method. So I started doing this, and there were two challenges that I faced there. One, you get IntelliSense in the scope of the method, which is nice, but the moment you extract that out into a separate object, you start having a dynamic type.
Yeah.
And the other thing is that this is still a typeless object. So
yeah.
I can't transition this into like a real person object if I wanted to.
Right.
So that was another challenge. And additionally, anonymous types are defined internal. So it can't cross.
Export it from the boundary, right?
Right. So when it comes to like testing MVC, what we use in MVC is like URL.routeURL. Mm-hmm. So you have to do internals visible to your test project. Same thing with serialization. Serializing a anonymous type, you have to do internals yeah. visible to the JSON.NET to serialize that. So this is where I was like, okay, it's to a point where I have a real production need for building out something that's real.
Yeah. Right?
So the next thing, this is called Gemini. That's what I ended up building out. So you can actually just do install package Gemini to get this package. Okay. So here I would say person is equal to new Gemini.
Okay. So this is something that you're building on top of the dynamic stuff.
Yeah. Okay. All Gemini does is inherit from dynamic object.
Got it.
And it's got some really interesting capabilities there. So now here's my transition. So this is that middle layer that I so desperately needed. Okay? So I went from a dictionary, which isn't sufficient. I went to the anonymous type. And now I'm to this point where I have this this Gemini object. Let me show you what it looks like when I print this out. Okay?
Okay.
So I'm going to just, print this out. And debug, start new instance. I'll probably have to put a console right in.
Every time, we always do that. We always forget that. I always forget that myself.
Console.readline. There we go. Okay. So we're going to see what this looks like. Okay. And what you'll notice that we're going to see this transition occur. So right now, this is still a quote-unquote typeless object. Okay. So the type of this object is Gemini.
Uh-huh.
And it's got a name, which is of type string, and a Mirajan. Is the string. So
that's the property.
Okay. So the really cool thing about this Gemini object is that it's very readable. If you do a two-string, you actually get to see what is this thing, what are the types in this thing, et cetera.
I see. So Gemini is a type you've built over dynamic. Because the cool thing, right, is because if you use a full dynamic, right, in a method, you're not going to get IntelliSense.
Right.
But if you use a Gemini object with an anonymous type, that anonymous type will have help inside of the method.
Yep. And so another nice thing, another interesting thing about Gemini, so I'm going to do something here. I'm going to say person.sayHello. Okay. And I'm going to set that equal to a new function that returns a string. Or I'll create an action, right? Okay? And then I'll do, I'll just do write using that write method. And here I'll just say person.name.
Okay?
Okay? Right there. Like so. Okay?
So you've just created a new method for person.
Yes, and it's called say hello, and that's what it looks like. So now if I do person.sayHello, like so. So ReSharper knows that there's been a usage of say hello, so it can. It's not IntelliSense Intelli maybe.
Got it.
That's what I like calling it. It's Intelli good enough.
Yeah, as long as something comes out. Right?
Something comes up, right? That's good enough for me. So you'll see that it actually prints it out. All right? So that's pretty crazy that I can add methods on the fly. So here's something interesting. What is one of the benefits, from your perspective, what do you think is one of the greatest things about like jQuery?
Well, the thing about jQuery is that you can access anything at any time, and then you can get a reference to it, and not only that, but then you can start attaching actions to those things as well.
jQuery plugins.
Yeah.
Right? You can create a plugin that's like, I want to do, I've got the core jQuery stuff, now I want to do validation, right? jQuery validation was a huge thing, where you just say jQuery validation and suddenly my object had validation capabilities, right? So the idea here is, okay, I'm to a point where this object is still typeless, right? I'm still doing a Gemini.
Right.
I'm to a point where I want to transition this into a more class, a real class, okay? And that's actually really easy to do. Again, this is that transition into a more typed system, because that's the interesting thing that I've seen with dynamic typing in the .NET framework. like an MVC URL dot route URL. Mm-hmm. That's all typeless. Hub on SignalR, hub dot all the stuff in there. It's a dynamic object, mm-hmm. but it's still typeless. You can't tell what this thing is. So here I'm going to a point where I say, okay, I want this to actually inherit from Gemini. Now the best way to think about this, I know this feels kind of worrisome. Gemini, the way that, so the beautiful thing about installing the Gemini package is that it installs a source into the solution. Mm-hmm. It's 800 lines, and you can see exactly what it's doing. So what do all objects in .NET inherit from?
Object.
System.object, yeah. Right? So all Gemini is like, well, instead of inheriting from system.object, I'm gonna inherit from system.dynamicObject. So that's a really good way to think about it from that perspective. And let's see, now I'm gonna create just a constructor. Well, I'll just leave it at that right there. Oh, let me create my constructor. Public class.
A public person.
Person.
There you go.
Person, and I'll give it object DTO, right? Uh-huh. That calls into my base. Base DTO, like so.
Right.
Okay. And now, here's this transition that I wanted. That's all I have to do. That's the one change I have to make. And suddenly this is transitioned into, you'll see that all the code still works. But I'm moving slowly and slowly towards a more static instance. And the idea behind it is that when you only bring in the complexity when you need it.
I see. So if there's, like, for example, if there's something on a person that's just never going to change, like their name mm-hmm. or their birthday, you put that in the static part of the object, mm-hmm. and then what you can do is use the dynamic parts in
right.
a different way.
So we're to this point. Now I want to actually take say hello mm-hmm. and move it into the class, right? I don't want to, because I want that to be available for any instantiation of the class, right? So here's something that's really interesting also. Notice that it's a private method. And I'm gonna just do, I'll just do the console write line here. Okay. Console.WriteLine.
And then there's this.
So here's the interesting thing, if I do this, I don't have access to the name. This name is an extension method, right?
Right.
Right, so, but I don't have access to the name property because it's dynamic.
Yeah, it doesn't know about it.
Right, so there's a little escape hatch called underscore. And now this, what it does is it casts this to a dynamic type, so then I can just say name. So even though the name property isn't there, it
interesting.
Is.
Wait, what is this underscore part of the language, or is this part of Gemini?
It's part of Gemini.
Interesting.
And so the thing is, like I said, it's the source is given to you, right? So we can just go to the implementation. That's all it is.
That's so clever,
right? So you know, you get. I don't want. One of the things was I was so afraid of dynamic, and I want to make sure that other people aren't. You know, don't deal with that kind
of
fear.
I think my biggest challenge with dynamic mm-hmm. is I had this sense that I had to like jump off a deep end and do all dynamic. But what you're doing with this Gemini is you're saying, okay, let's make some parts dynamic.
Yep.
We can make other types static, other parts static, and that way you can have the best of both worlds.
Right, and that's one thing that I'm a polyglot, so I've done like a lot of languages, and one of the challenges with using Ruby, which is, you know, fully dynamic language, is that it's got that first part of the spectrum, but there are some times where you get benefits from being statically typed, and there's some maintainability benefits, but they have no way of going static, right? It just doesn't exist. And the challenge with C# before 4.0 came out was that we weren't able to use the productivity gains of using dynamic, but we got a lot of the security that came from static typing.
Right.
So we go through all these trouble of all that class explosion that I showed you at the beginning, which eventually pays off,
right.
But we spend all that time doing it up front. Right. So now this gives a way to say, well, you can do, you know, dynamic up to a point, and then when you're ready to shift over, you can do static and everything's fine.
That's awesome. Is there a website for this? Where can people go and download this and take a look?
Yeah, so you can, if you go to amirrajan.net/, I'll just go to the GitHub repo, GitHub/oak with a capital O.
Mm-hmm.
And right here, there's a wiki, and this is fully documented. It talks about the dynamic runtime, what you can do with it, the benefits of using dynamic typing, and all that stuff. Now I'm going to show you one more thing.
Let's see it.
This will blow your mind. I promise. So a challenge that I've always dealt with is sometimes I just want to like look at a database and see what's inside of it. So the interesting thing about Gemini is that it's got this concept in here called method missing. So the idea here is that I try to call a property on this, I try to call a method on this dynamic object that doesn't exist. Mm-hmm. Well, because of how dynamic object works in iMetadata Provider, there's actually a method called tryGetMember and trySetMember, mm-hmm. and tryInvokeMethod and you know all those things.
Got it.
So I hook into that, and I actually created a data access layer that is completely dynamic. And let me explain that to you. Okay, so I've got like a really simple DSL, and all it does is it's creating tables. So I just want to show you, okay, nothing up my sleeve, right? I'm going to create the data source. Mm-hmm. I'm going to create a table called blogs. I'll give it a title and with nvarchar 255. I'm going to create something called comments. Mm-hmm. It will also be an identity column, nvarchar 255, and it's got a foreign key to blog.
Got it.
Okay. Now, I'm going to create a new instance of DynamicDB, giving it the connection string. So now, it knows, it uses information schema to figure out what tables exist. So by doing db.blogs, even though I've not defined any kind of blogs property or blogs method, it's using method missing to actually generate to actually create a dynamic repository. Basically, it creates all the ADO.NET things that I would need to create an insert. So it will actually insert this title into the database. And then it returns the blog ID, right? And then I can insert comments, same way. Just by typing in comments, it knows the table exists because it's an information schema. It generates the ADO.NET instance to create these things, and then it inserts those things in there.
That's amazing.
Now here's this ability, you know, it has an option to get a single entry. Now, because of the convention of using blog ID, I can actually do db.blogs.single.comments.
That's right, because it has the foreign key.
And the thing that DynamicDB does is it looks at information schema saying, okay, what's the foreign key? Okay, this is a valid foreign key that I can use. Now it's going to return a collection of comments that exists in the database. And there are no methods on DynamicDB. It's all using method missing to try to figure out how to traverse this database.
Now, is DynamicDB something that's part of Oak as well?
Yep.
Interesting.
Yep.
And so, in essence, what you've done is you've gone fully dynamic, deferring actual loading of stuff until the very last possible second.
So, and that's the beauty of it. It's, I can go with this as long as blogs doesn't need that complexity,
right?
And as soon as I say, well, okay, blogs needs it, you know, I need to actually have a blog object, I can create a blog object
at
that point.
This is the thing, like, I have learned over the years, make it work, then make it better.
Yeah.
Instead, we spend all our time during the make it work phase in trying to make it better,
yeah.
Where if you just need something simple, get it to work, mm-hmm. and then iterate from there, right?
Yeah, and one thing that I've seen is that, or I've self-reflected on is that I have to stop bringing a big cannon to every problem.
Right.
If a small little thing is like, okay, let's do a retrieval, we can just spit it over and throw some JSON up. I don't need to create any classes. I can just use DynamicDB, get the blogs, and then that object that comes back is just a single row that's serializable because it's a dictionary object. And then I use JSON.NET's value type key value converter and return it back.
Well, this is awesome stuff, man. Thanks for spending some time with us.
Yeah.
And anyways, is there a site for Oak or?
Yeah, so the wiki is right there, right? Okay. And it's actually got a link to the Oak GitHub page. Mm-hmm. And this includes some notoriety that Oak has received across the board. It also has some introductory videos with regards to, how do you get up and running?
Right.
What's the value add for using Oak? What different components you can use? You don't have to use the entire thing. You can use just a small part of it.
Yeah, if you want to just use Gemini, for example.
Yeah.
Or just the database part.
Yeah, and all the NuGet packages are out there, so you can do that. But all the information with full-blown sample apps are available for you. And, it's just that thing. It's like, just think about incremental development. Think about good enough solutions without creating brick walls for yourself.
Well, thanks so much for spending some time with us, Amir. And thanks for watching. We will see you next time. There's tons of great stuff happening with .NET and open source. Take care.
See ya.